was also addicted to the sex. And I had gotten to the point where, you know, I didn't even need the drugs anymore to have the sex. I just wanted to have the sex.
I need help because I got involved in a lifestyle that was very unattractive. I seemed to not be able to say no to people of the opposite sex.
And it was exciting for me. But afterwards, it always made me feel.
I can remember at its worst, at its very worst, I can remember going to a party the night before, getting drunk and blacking out, and waking up the next morning to someone that I barely knew.
It came to be where I liked it more and more. Each new thing, like having sex in public, was the next, you know, new exciting thing, or having multiple partners at the same time was the next new thing.
As we walk to work, do our shopping, or jog through a park, we can't help but notice people from all walks of life. Some suffer in a visible way, while others suffer silently. Their suffering goes unnoticed by passerbyers. One out of every six women, including Christians, struggles with an addiction to pornography.
Sex addiction in women is very much like sex addiction in men. There are some different presentations. I think one of the misconceptions about this term sex addiction that skews our thinking about it is that we like to separate, well, sex addict versus love or relationship addict. You know, I'd not rather be a love addict. It just kind of sounds sweet and southern. But ultimately, the dynamics are all the same. And I think the best way to conceptualize this is sex addiction is an umbrella term. The same way alcoholism is an umbrella term. We don't talk about a beer addict or a Jack Daniels addict or a champagne addict. They're all just alcoholics. And sex addicts are the same thing. That they're these different flavors. There's the love or relationship addict, that's going from man to man to man, partner to partner, affair to affair. Sure, women do that. But women also are addicted to visual pornography, to masturbation, to anonymous kinds of sex. And all of these are part of sex addiction. I think the label is so awful. Sex addict, it's just awful, especially for women, that we react against it and we'd like to find a softer term. It's a wrong term to start with. This isn't about sex. Those of us who struggle know that. It's not about sex, even if you're having anonymous sex all over the place. It's about things that are much deeper. So the term's a misnomer. It actually should be intimacy disorder. But sex addiction is the one that we're stuck with. And I think it's helpful if we realize that term, as awful as it is, describes all of us. We are more alike than we are different. Sure, women frequently are romance addicts. I'm not in it for the relationship, I'm in it for the chase. I want those hits of some guy saying, you know, hey, aren't you wonderful, or the power that comes in that. Sure, women struggle with that, including Christian women.
When I was 13, 14 years old, I went through a very traumatic event. I was date raped, and as a result, carried that with me for years and didn't tell anybody what had happened. And part of that is because most victims don't realize, they believe that it's their fault. And I certainly believe that about myself. It was during those dark years, for about a 5-year period of time, that, again, I struggled so much with my identity and finding out how to say no and how to say yes. And I really didn't know how to say no to the opposite sex. And I can remember at its very worst, I can remember going to a party the night before, getting drunk and blacking out, and waking up the next morning to someone that I barely knew. And I remember my mom actually knocking on the hotel door, and I'm opening up the door, and she's seeing me there. And I was so humiliated and filled with so much shame. All I could think of was, I am really lost, and I am very, very ashamed of my mom, who loves me, seeing me like this. And that was the beginning of a change for me, because I didn't want to feel that way anymore.
Sex addiction really isn't about sex at all. Our sexual behavior is just the tip of the iceberg. That behavior is just the top of the iceberg that covers a whole host of problems underneath. And for many of us, those problems include abuse. Many, many people who struggle with sex addiction are untreated sexual trauma survivors. We know that in our culture today, at least one out of three females, one out of five males are going to be sexually abused by the time she or he is 18 years old. I mean, that's an epidemic. It's everywhere. And another topic that, especially within the church, we're not talking about. So many, many people struggle with the after effects of sexual abuse earlier in their history, in their childhood. And why does that make such a difference? Because like nothing else, sexual abuse confuses that line between sex and love, between sex and violence, between sex and fear, between sex and survival. Sometimes, you know, I have to be sexual with this person, this parent, because this is the one that's taking care of me. And my survival depends on remaining in relationship with this person. It's enormously confusing.
So I remember the first time that I was molested, I was quite young. I think I must have been around 4 or 5. And I don't even know who the molester was, but I remember that that there was some penetration with a foreign object. As I got a little bit older, I was about 5 or 6, one of my older brothers started, you know, molesting me. He wasn't that much older than me. And so as I got older and I look back on it, I kind of seemed like, well, maybe it was just childhood stuff. You know, maybe it was just stuff that kids go through. But I really remember the time we were at a lake with my family, and I had gone up to the car, and my brother followed me up there and tried to, you know, do oral copulation on me. And I just remember how I knew that that was wrong. I knew that he had crossed some kind of line, and I had told him at that point, don't ever come near me again. And he never did after that. Then as I was becoming into adolescence, years later, you know, it happened again with another family member. And I just remember how I felt like it was my fault. Like, you know, maybe I shouldn't have been going, you know, maybe I should have covered up better from when I got to the, from the bathroom to the bedroom. Or
I didn't want to feel that way anymore. And God put in my heart, He's put in every single human's heart, a desire to know Him and to be loved by Him, and I was searching for that. Little did I know it was in His hands. It was through His Son, Jesus Christ. And that is what ultimately changed me and what healed me. And I am before you today someone who is 100% whole and 100% healed and has zero amount of shame, and it can change through the blood of Jesus Christ. And through taking the steps you need to take to get the healing that you need, no matter what that is, just be willing to commit yourself to the process, or someone that you know who needs healing, to say, are you willing to do whatever it takes to get healed? Because if you are, you'll get healed. And Jesus is the first step in that process.
The women out there want to know, can they be set free? And how would they go about that?
You can be set free, and but not on your own power. Only through the grace of God can you be set free. And for me, what I did is, you know, I started going to church. I started asking God for forgiveness, and 12-step programs really helped, both because it's a place to go where there's people that are just like you, a place where you can go and be accepted, where you don't have to feel ashamed, and where you know there's other people working on, you know, getting through some of the emotional baggage from their past and getting rid of some of these things that attach themselves to us in our lives.